Hi, my name's Floyd. I'm an alcoholic. Sober today through the grace of God, and I thank you for being here today to help me stay sober today. And for me, this is one of those promises coming true. Because when I was a brand new drunk, dry but not yet sober, the older people in my MIP group from Wurzburg, we're still here. Hey guys, good to see you. Said, we're going to this convention. And I was like, well, what's that? Well, we get together and there's meetings and there's food and there's dancing and there's the beach and there's this and there's that. And I was like, yeah, sounds good. And we came here and we were meeting over there at where the gym is now. And I sat there. Well, actually, I couldn't sit on those hard wooden stools. I would stand in the back. And the people would be up there speaking. And I said to one of the guys, I want to be up there one day, man. One day, I want to be up there doing that. You know, I want to stay sober long enough to do that. And this was 20-something years ago. And 20-something years ago. And even though I've been here many times and always wanted to be up here, sticking with the theme, Easy Does It, because I am learning, thanks to my good friend Joe, to use that, I am learning that things come in God's time, not in my time. So let me tell my story. First of all, I want to say, if you get a resentment against anything I say, please pray for me because I need it. But some people will probably get a resentment because I am a true believer in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a true believer in the big book. I'm a true believer that how it works is how it works. And one of my favorite stories to tell was being at the Minrota convention some years ago. I think it was Loyston then. And this guy comes up, flamboyant guy from Paris. He walks up to the thing, and he does this thing, and he says, everybody's asking, always asking how it works. They're at a meeting, and they're talking about, well, how does it work? And he says, how it works is in how it works. It's not a mystery. It's right there. It's right there in how it works. But the thing for me, my journey is about accepting that how it works is how it works. And because I'm an alcoholic or human or male or whatever, I always want things to be my way. Always. Right now, I want them to be my way. And this started, and because I'm an alcoholic, I'm an Al-Anon, and I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, and it's all part of my story, so I'll tell it that way. For me, my story starts on a summer night in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I don't know if you know the states, one of the southern towns, but southern states, southern town. And my alcoholic father was beating the crap out of my mother. And I was 6 years old. The oldest of five. And as my father was beating my mother said, boy, go run down the street and tell my friend that this is happening. Hurry up and get him over here before this man kills me. And I was like, Mom, I only had on my underwear because it was summertime in North Carolina. We didn't have air conditioning then. And it was hot. And I ran out the house and I was running down this dark street in North Carolina. Little boy in his underwear, running to try to save his mother. And I was thinking at that time, I was like, what can I do to stop this? You know, how can I take some control to stop this? How can I protect my mother? How can I protect my siblings? You know, how can I exercise some control? Right? And then my mother, God bless her, would tell me, son, I love my mother, loved her. And she would take me after these beatings or after they had some fight or something, and she would come to me and she would say, son, whatever you do, don't end up like your father. Promise me, son, whatever happens, do not end up like your father. And I would say, yes, ma'am, I'm not going to end up like my father. Right? My father was a soldier. He was a scotch drinker. He was an outside drinker. You know? He was hardly home. And when he was home, the kids were afraid of him. And all my life, I said, I'm not going to end up like my father. Fast forward, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, I'm sitting in a bar in Frankfurt in the red light district because it was one of my favorite hangouts. I had a wife, I had two kids, had a good job. But I was sitting in the bar in the red light district, drinking scotch, smoking Salems like my father. I was a soldier like my father. I wasn't home like my father. My kids were afraid of me like my father. And I looked up into the mirror. At that time, I hardly ever looked in the mirror. And I looked up and I looked at my face and I saw my father's face. And those words of my mother came back to me like, and I'm like, how did I end up like my father? How did this happen? Right? And the good thing to be saying right now in the meeting is then the Spirit of God came down and I stumbled into an AA meeting and never drank again. And God, I wish that was true. But that ain't true. Because alcoholism's not like that. Alcoholism takes no prisoners. Because that moment of clarity was gone after the next gulp of scotch. And I don't know when I looked in the mirror again for the rest of my time drinking. I can't remember it, you know, to really look. Because the next time I really looked into a mirror again, I had already stopped drinking. So, how did I end up like my father? Well, I drank. And drinking did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And we say, God will do for me what I can't do for myself. Well, drinking did for me what I could not do for myself. When I drank, I was no longer afraid. When I drank, I felt alive. When I drank, I didn't feel whatever I didn't want to feel. I was able to do stuff. It did for me what I could not do for myself. And it's easy for someone to say, maybe, hey, give that up. Stop. Why would I stop and give up something that's doing for me what I can't do for myself? I love drinking. And I use the word love because I don't know any other word to use. I loved drinking. To drink. I loved it more than my son, more than my daughter, more than my wife, more than anything. And my life became centered around that, period. And nothing got in the way long between me and drinking. The ironic part of this story is one of my jobs in the Army, the last part of my career, I was in the psychology services and I worked in drug and alcohol treatment. Of course, we're a good place for a drunk, right? And part of drug and alcohol treatment, you know, we had to go to these hospitals and we would do this thing called half step. Which later on I find very funny. We do this thing called half step, because the patients were in there for 6 weeks and we'd go in there for 2.5 weeks and live like a patient, but not really. Right? Because we knew we were leaving and they weren't, and we could go out and drink and all that. And we're supposed to go in there and not drink and be like a patient. So the first night I'm in there, I call my wife, God bless her, and I say, "Baby, I'm here in this place. They got me locked up like a prisoner. Can't you come and see me and bring me some whiskey?" Now, she loved me very much. And, you know, we find our good Al-Anons. Thank you, Al-Anons. Love you. We wouldn't be here without you. So she jumps in the car. She drives up to the place. She comes and sees me. You know, we kiss and hug and do the thing. And then I get what I really wanted, my scotch. So I'm in the clinic. I drank some scotch, and we're in group therapy one day. And one of the guys who I didn't know was an AA at the time says to me, you know, because he could smell it. You know, when you're a drinker, you think other people can't smell it, but they do. And there's all those myths that if you drink gin, people can't smell it. If you drink vodka, people can't smell it. That's a bunch of BS, man. He could smell it. And he didn't say, "You're drinking." He said, "You think you got a problem with alcohol?" And I was like, no. And he said, "To try this controlled drinking thing." Now, people who worked in treatment may know about this. There was a doctor called Marty Mann, and he developed this controlled drinking therapy thing. And his thing was, if you could drink 3 drinks in 24 hours and not more, then you can control your drinking. So I would give myself this test every 3 months or so. But the thing was, yeah. The thing was, my 3 drinks consisted of 3 shots of scotch, and I counted that as 1. And I would start at 10 o'clock and have 3 shots times 3, 9 shots from 10 to 12, and then from 12 after another 9, and convince myself I was passing the Marty Mann test. That's alcoholism. Meanwhile, my kids were afraid of me. My wife had not only stopped being affectionate, stopped cooking for me, she had even stopped buying groceries for me to cook for myself. And one of the funniest stories for me, about funny, sad, is like I said, I was in the Army and we were going to deploy back in the Balkan War time. And we were on these buses, and they had the families to wave goodbye at us. And I looked out the window, and she was standing there with the 2 kids, and she was crying. She was like, "Oh!" And I was like, "Oh, she's going to miss me." A couple years later, she told me she was crying tears of joy. She said, "I was crying tears of joy to get a break from you, man." Bless her heart. Bless her heart. Yeah. So the end of my drinking, which I hope is the end, knock on wood, I'm an alcoholic, was down there in this deployment area, and I was drinking and drugging, running the street, breaking all the laws, and the consequences came. Bam, bam, bam. And I was standing before the judge, which in this case was the colonel, judge, same thing. And this man had the power to throw me in jail for 10 years, 20 years, some amount of years. And I was so afraid and so numb and so sad. It was done. I was dead. I was dead inside. And the only thing I felt Well, two things, fear and anger. I would wake up afraid, I would go to sleep afraid, and in the middle I would be angry. That's all. Fear and anger. And the day I got that moment of clarity that stuck, I was sitting in the tent with my boss, who was a psychiatrist, and he said to me, Sergeant Kizzy, last name's Kizzy, Sergeant Kizzy, I think you got a drinking problem. And just before I was going to deny it, the sun came out. And we were in Eastern Europe, and it wasn't hardly ever sunny. And the sun came out at that moment and shined through the tent. And for some reason, I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, we're going to get you some help. I said, okay. And then later on, I was walking that day, more like trudging. I didn't walk anymore. I walked like this. If somebody said something to me, I said, I don't curse much, but I'll do it for the story. What the fuck you want? A guy walked by me and said, Jesus loves you. Just kept going. That was one. That was the second one. Then I was sitting there in front of the barracks, because I was on what's called triple lockdown, right? Because we couldn't leave the base, which I'd done. And you couldn't leave the common area, which I'd done. And I wasn't supposed to leave the place I was living, which I'd done. So they had me locked down three times. I called it triple lockdown. And I was sitting outside, chain smoking cigarettes, because that's all I could do. And I had this watch that rang every 30 minutes. And I said my Santa Claus prayers, because I believed in Santa Claus God at the time. And I'd say a bunch of prayers about God please this, God please that, God please this, God please that, God let me get away with this, let me get away with that, and feed the hungry children in Africa, amen. Yeah. So I was saying my 30-minute prayer, smoking my cigarettes, and this guy comes up to me, my enemy. My number one enemy, because he was the guy that was in charge of delivering consequences. And I didn't like him. Don't ever like the person who's delivering the consequences, right? And I said, oh man, here he comes. He comes up to me and he says, hey, how you doing? I said, you know how I'm doing, MF. Used to curse back then. And he said, yeah. I tell you what. This is me. If I go somewhere and there's one beer, I'll have one. If there's two, I'll have two. If there's three, I'll have three. If there's four, I'll have four. I think he got to about six before I understood what he was saying. And he said, if you are like this at all, I got a place for you to go. He didn't promise me you ain't going to get any trouble. He didn't say your consequences would be taken away. Nothing. All he said is, if you drink like this, I got a place for you to go. What else was I going to do? I was on triple lockdown, right, already. And I was like, okay. I didn't know it was an AA meeting. So I walk in there. It was a tent. It was him and another guy. Two guys. We sit down. They do the deal. They read the preamble. They read how it works. They read the 12th edition. They read the daily reflection. And then they talked about drinking and staying sober. And then they read more about alcoholism. It's still one of my favorite parts of the big book. If you've done such and 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 such, which I've done almost every one of them except for the natural wines. And it hit me. You're an alcoholic. And I was like, a weight was lifted off my shoulder. Because the answer to how I ended up like my father was finally there. Oh! And after the meeting, I like this story. After the meeting, I ran to the telephone booth, because back then we didn't have handies. You had to use the telephone booth. And I called Germany, where my wife was, let the phone ring. And she didn't like me calling her. She did not want to hear from me. So she picks up the phone, and I'm like, baby! And she was like, oh, no. You know, I'm laughing because I can call her today, any time of the night, day, night, Christmas, I don't care. I can, if I needed her for something, we're no longer together, that doesn't matter. If I needed her for something today, she would be there just like that. That's the program. We're getting to that part of the story. Let me finish this part. So I say, baby, guess what? Oh, what? I'm an alcoholic. You know, you tell your Al-Anon you're alcoholic, and then they're like, duh. And she's crying, and she's like, oh, finally. I've been telling you this for years. Finally. I was like, you have? I was like, okay, I'll talk to you later, because I didn't have much money and it was cost money, I was hungry. And then I called my mother. And I hardly ever called my mother, because my mother would always ask me, son, how you doing? How the kids? How's the wife? How, you know how mothers are. And I didn't want to lie to my mother and say, mom, things are going to H. So the answer, the alcoholic answer, was just not call her. Right? Just don't call your mother. So I called my mother, and she's surprised, and she's, because if I called her, that means something was wrong. So she's like, yes, son. And I was like, mama, guess what? I'm an alcoholic. And she starts crying and says, oh, finally. After all these years, somebody finally saw it. And I was like, what? People knew. Everybody knew. My boss knew. My wife knew. My mother knew. My kids knew. Even the waitresses and bartenders in my favorite bars knew. Because when I got back and wasn't drinking and told them I'm in AA and I'm not drinking, they all said, good, thank God. Do you know how bad your drinking's got to be for bartenders and waitresses to be happy you ain't drinking? Yeah. So I got that. But the story is, what happens after? And I like to use, and it was there in the daily reflection, I think, day before yesterday, or yesterday the 30th, or the day before, freedom from, freedom to. Because after freedom from active drinking, what's next? And I like to do the thing like when the slaves were freed in America, after Abraham Lincoln did the thing, and they were probably like, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. But then what? After you're free from the slavery of alcohol, What then? Ah, but the book says what? There is a solution. There is a solution. Experience strength and hope. The solution for this drama is what it says that I need to do. Carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic in and out of these rooms. That is my main primary function. And alcoholics, and this is where people might start getting resentment, God bless you. Alcoholics get sober, they get all cleaned up. Everybody here is all cleaned up. The women get looking really beautiful again. You know, the men got a little money in their pocket. And then the job becomes more important. The wife becomes more important. The lover becomes more important. Going on vacation becomes more important. Somebody else can open the meeting. Somebody else can sweep the floor. Somebody else can carry the message. I carried the message for 5 years. I carried the message for 10 years. Ah, blah, 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 blah. I go back to that day that alcoholic came up to me. Because he did not have to do that in his position. He had to do it as an alcoholic. Those guys had long-term sobriety. They probably could have stayed sober in that environment without a meeting. Probably. But that meeting saved my black ass. Because when I got my moment of clarity, there was a meeting with a door open. They weren't too busy to be there for that still suffering alcoholic to come crawling through the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I hear, you know, people got to do what they got to do and they got to live the life they got to live and be a service how they got to be a service. So let go and let God. I'm telling my story only. This is my story. For me, there's nothing more important than to be there in the door when that next drunk comes stumbling in. Because if they walk up to the door and it's closed, who the heck knows how long it's going to be again? And today, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. The dreams I've dreamed of sitting on those bar stools. One day I'm going to do this. One day I'm going to do that. One day I want to do this. One day, one day, one day, one day. My life in sobriety has passed all that by like a rocket ship. It's not even close. Not even close. My daughter, whose heart I broke, I saw her little heart break in front of my face. A couple years ago, we drove across the states together, me and her, taking turns, enjoying each other's music, or at least tolerating each other's music. Talking about stuff. Opening my life to how a young woman sees the world. My sons call me and ask me for advice about their relationships and being fathers, what they should do about their bosses. People see me coming and they're happy. People see me coming and they're happy. People used to see me coming and they couldn't wait to run the other way. Like, here comes that knucklehead. And I get to be up here tonight with you, with my people, with the people who saved my life, man. And they are out there saving lives every day. And you may not even know it. It's just the smile you give somebody because you're working your program and you're being patient, kind, loving, and tolerant, and somebody's looking like, why is so-and-so so calm when everybody else is going crazy? And somebody says, oh, he's in AA. Oh. Or she's in Al-Anon. Oh, okay. And it gets passed on. We've inherited from Bill and Bob and Lois and Ann something so wonderful, freely given. And the only thing it asks of me is a little bit of my time, much less time than I spent drinking. If I added together all the time I spent in meetings, whatever service in AA for the last 20 years, I'm still way in deficit from the time I spent drinking and drugging and running the street. Way in deficit. So, how am I with time? I'm good? Yeah. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And I wish I could honestly say I love Alcoholics Anonymous more than I love drinking. But if I said that, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. You know? I'm an alcoholic, man. I could leave this stage right now and go get drunk. And I've seen long-term sobriety. That is the most heartbreaking thing. Because it goes like that. What I have is a daily reprieve contingent upon my spiritual condition. That's all I got. Contingent upon my spiritual condition. And it says in the book that there are times, no matter how long you've been sober, how long I've been sober, no matter how many steps I work, sponsors I've had, sponsees I've had, many meetings I've been to, cups of coffee, there will come a time and the only thing between me and the next drink is my relationship with my higher power. And I've been there. Been there. And I was just glad that I was able to reach out for God in those times and say, hey, just please don't let me drink. Whatever. Life on life's terms, but please don't let me drink. And today, I got up, came here with my home group. We took the train up. We had fun. We laughed. We joked. We helped each other. We spread sunshine. People were around us and they were like happy because we were happy, you know. Kept my commitment. Didn't drink today. I'm sober today. But I ain't guaranteed to be sober tomorrow. So this drunk hits his knees at night and I hit my knees in the morning. And I say thank you. And I say, please, God, let me be sober another day. And I try to give it away to keep it. And I try to send that message whenever I can. Be there. Be there in the doorway when that person comes stumbling in. Be there. Yes. Thank you for letting me share.